Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on July 15th, 2020, from my home studio here in Columbia. And just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features a look at the governor's push to have schools open 5 days a week, despite pushback from the state superintendent of education. Senator Lindsey Graham backs Dr. Anthony Fauci while calling attention to medical staffing shortages in the state. We get a look at the markets from a local financial analyst, and we have the latest COVID-19 data for you. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from y'all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a 1 to 3 minute, 3 minute max, guys, long voicemail at 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, where you're calling from, and what's going on in your world. Again, we love hearing from you. Just don't get cut off by the machine. 803-563-7169. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing, widespread, and not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control officials. There have been 984 deaths, and currently there are 62,071 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of July 15th at 4 p.m. There are currently 1,560 hospital beds occupied by patients who have either tested positive or are under investigation for COVID-19. And of those patients, 206 are on ventilators currently. It's a new high. The infection rate is also 21.6%. Governor Henry McMaster and Republican statehouse leaders held a press conference on July 15th about reopening schools this fall with the option of face-to-face, five-day-a-week instruction or the option of online learning. Again, McMaster stressed the need to have a full five-day-a-week option for students in any school district's reopening plan that is submitted to the Department of Education. Here's the governor.
We must give parents the choice. This is the only thing that we're asking these districts to do today is to give the parents the choice. The parents are looking to our schools. The parents pay taxes for the schools. The Constitution provides for schools. We must see that the children have these schools available. If the parent wants to send their child back to school, they should be able to do so and to do so with confidence. If the parents want to keep the child at home, they should be able to do that and do it with confidence. The district, each district must allow the parents to make that choice for their children. I ask our superintendent, Molly Spearman, not to approve any district plan that doesn't give parents the choice to send their children to classroom face-to-face instruction. But let me be clear, each district, it is the district that must craft their own reopening plans. I'm not going to issue an executive order on this. The legislature has spoken, the leadership is here. It is in the continuing resolution that it is the superintendents and the districts that will provide these plans for getting the children back to school. That is the law.
State Superintendent of Education Molly Spearman has the authority to approve or reject a district's reopening plan. She was invited to the press conference, but chose not to attend. The governor said he spoke with her previously about his decision, something that he can't technically mandate due to the continuing resolution that's in effect. Spearman issued a statement following the press conference saying that she supports returning to five-day-a-week instruction, but that such a decision to do so rests with school districts. She said, quote, "We cannot, however, turn a blind eye to the health and safety of our students and staff when the spread of the virus in some of our communities is among the highest in the world. School leaders, in consultation with public health experts, are best positioned to determine how in-person operations should be carried out to fit the needs of their local communities. I remain committed to supporting them in this endeavor and will only approve those plans that offer high-quality options and keep safety as their top priority." Again, that was Superintendent Education Molly Spearman there in a statement after the governor's press conference. Now, the South Carolina School Boards Association also sided with Spearman, along with several other organizations, and they said in part that, quote, "the decision of when and how to open schools is best made at the local level," quote. Now, days before this press conference, teachers were worried about the implementation of haphazard plans that don't adhere to health guidelines and also inequitable funding to implement new standards. A letter was sent to the governor last week from leaders of the Palmetto State Teachers Association, SC4Ed, and the South Carolina Education Association asking for clear standards governing policies like classroom safety with PPE, cleaning materials, and sanitizing classrooms, as well as medical leave policies in the event of exposure to be uniformly drawn up by the state. The group also asked state lawmakers to fully fund schools to handle the pandemic. Now, the Accelerate ED recommended not to reopen schools if there is a high incident rate in the area and to resort to distance learning in those situations. Governor McMaster said that the lack of broadband internet in some areas of the state is another reason schools should have five-day-a-week instruction in place, especially since some 10,000 students haven't been in contact with schools since they closed on March 16th.
We cannot restrict learning by forcing students to participate in remote learning when many of our students in rural parts of the state have no access to internet at home to begin with. As you know, we are working diligently on a broadband plan to extend that around the state, but it's not done yet. All children, regardless of their zip code, must have the opportunity to attend in-class instruction, and it is up to the parents to make that choice.
And furthermore, there's a fear of a hidden wave of child abuse going underreported if students aren't seen face-to-face by teachers.
The schools also protect many of our most vulnerable children. The Department of Social Services reports that child abuse and neglect complaints received by the agency during this pandemic have gone down. That's because the children are not at school to alert the school teachers and the authorities there, the nurses and the teachers and the principals, of difficulties. We suspect that the incidents are going up, although the reports are going down because the children are not in school. And of all our school children, about 750,000 during this pandemic, as you know, the Department of Education has had a tremendous program for feeding them all during this time. It has been quite a grand accomplishment. But there are over 10,000 of those students since this pandemic began that we have not heard from their parents. They've been lost to us. We must regain that contact. And there are many more that there's only been minimum contact.
Federal money is in place to develop a broadband plan, and millions more are available to implement the plan, which is a priority of McMaster's, before the end of the year. Now, no Democrats were in attendance at this press conference, so Senate Minority Leader Nikki Setzer issued a statement following it, categorizing the governor's decision to reopen schools as, quote, premature. And he continued saying, South Carolina schools should only be opened when we know for certain it is safe for our students, teachers, and everyone who works in our education system to return. We know, based on testing data provided by DHEC every day, that their safety cannot be assured at this point, quote. Okay, so to wrap up, even though the governor held this press conference, it wasn't a mandate from him, rather a strong recommendation to Superintendent Spearman to disapprove district plans that don't have a full five-day-a-week option in them, something that with 50% school bus capacity is essentially impossible for districts to accomplish, and that's just one factor when you start looking into how this could get done. So, like we previously reported this week, school districts are still the ones making the decisions on what school will look like this fall. Expect a combination of some in-person learning and distance learning in some districts, and online only in some others, like Colleton County, where the school board has already voted to go online for the start of the year, according to the Post and Courier. Again, a lot more decisions to watch going forward, decisions that are happening at the local level. So I know that was a long segment there, but I want to take you to a press conference that Senator Lindsey Graham had this week on Tuesday, just to get you caught up on what's going on at the federal level. And at this press conference, Senator Graham publicly rebuked President Donald Trump's administration's reported attempts to undermine Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease expert. Here's his response here to a question about that.
Well, here's what I would say about Dr. Fauci. He's been around a long time. He's one of the smartest people I know. Has he been right all the time? No. We don't have a Dr. Fauci problem. We need to be focusing on doing things that get us to where we need to go. So I have all the respect in the world for Dr. Fauci. I think any effort to undermine him is not going to be productive, quite frankly.
Now, the remarks were surprising coming from Graham, a vocal Trump ally, and they come a week after his Democratic opponent, Jamie Harrison, announced his campaign brought in nearly $14 million in the second quarter, a record-shattering sum that nearly doubled his first quarter fundraising haul. Before this press conference, Graham had just met with hospital administrators at the Hospital Association of South Carolina and said increased masking would help the state, but didn't get in front of the governor, who has resisted a mandate saying it wouldn't be enforceable. This as more than 20 states, including now Alabama, have instituted these mandates.
Well, if you mandate masks, how do you enforce it? I don't think you're going to have, you know, the mask police go around and write everybody a ticket, but the more you can emphasize wearing a mask, the better. The data seems to suggest that states who are aggressive in masking are doing better than those who are not. We'll leave this up to the governor and the cities, but I've come away believing that three simple things can take a load off hospitals and healthcare providers: masking when you're around others, washing your hands, and social distancing. Think about it this way. Wearing a mask protects others, but if you're wearing a mask, to me, it shows that you're respectful of the doctors and nurses who are dealing with this problem. Every time I put a mask on, I'm going to think, this is my small contribution to help those on the front lines.
Senator Graham said one of the biggest eye-openers of the roundtable was how critical medical staffing has become since the post-Memorial Day surge.
Staffing. It's just not bed space. It's the people available to treat the patients. And the more your healthcare workforce gets infected, the harder it is to deal with the rise in infections. The sooner you can get test results back, the less PPE you use. The sooner you get test results back, you free up capability in the system. So what I got out of this thing is the hospitals since Memorial Day are struggling. And if we would just do simple things, we could turn this around substantially. What was most eye-opening is that I go to groups and they're always wanting money. And I don't blame them for asking for money because they're under siege financially. The big request was not a bunch of money, was just to emphasize to the public, you can help us if you'll wear a mask. You can help us if you'll wash your hands. You can help us if you'll practice common sense when it comes to social distancing. And at the federal level, you could help us a lot if you could focus on more testing supplies.
Senator Graham hopes to see a phase four stimulus bill soon, and one that compensates unemployed workers at a level that doesn't incentivize people not to work. Speaking directly about a $600 federal unemployment benefit that expires July 25th in South Carolina. Now we've got a quick economic section here for you. With the disruptions that occurred in the stock market due to the pandemic, many investors are now focusing on companies that can endure crises like this. Mike Switzer with the South Carolina Business Review spoke with Joseph Costigan, a chartered financial analyst with Apricus Wealth in Beaufort, about the markets and volatility.
It all depends on what risk means to you. Technically, risk is the same thing as uncertainty. At least that's how we approach it in our business. You know, if you're personal plan is predicated upon stock market return being average. In the short run, you have a really good risk of being disappointed, and this year is a perfect example of that. We define risk as what are the cash flows of a portfolio, and if they're at risk, you know, what are we going to do to mitigate that? The stock market bouncing up and down is, I think, a real risk if you're an insurance company, but for the average investor, I think it's hard to align with that, you know, with the stock market always going up, particularly in the short run.
Let's just go ahead and dive into where you see opportunities right now in the marketplace.
Things that we look at are things like the debt level of a company. Is a company profitable? Is a company going to continue to be able to pay its dividends? We think of these as risk factors that we can select away from. You know, we don't have to own every company in the market. We can own, in our view, the better companies, and avoid companies that maybe have these factors that are going to make them risky when bad times come. And bad times are always going to come. You know, the coronavirus wasn't expected, but a virus should have been anticipated. You know, you had the SARS virus, you had the West Nile virus, you had the Ebola virus. something was eventually going to come around that was going to cause this kind of situation, and you had to prepare for it. And the best time to prepare for it is before it happens. So when we're thinking about companies that we're going to own, like, and every company that I'm about to name, all of our clients own, and we co-invest with our clients, so we own them personally.
Okay, so before we get into the names then, are you saying that these are companies that were not affected by the virus? Now, every company in the world is going to anticipate a virus again. So are there other things that these companies that you're going to mention are also prepared just basically for the unknown or the unexpected?
Yeah, I think it's kind of common sense, Mike. You know, if you don't have too much debt, then when whether it's the financial crisis or the virus situation, you know, you'll be in a better position to survive it. So it's really about enduring beyond the threat. The last thing you want is to own a company that goes into bankruptcy. That's where you lose everything as an investor. So what we're looking for are businesses that are conservatively financed, that are growing, that have end markets that are positive. So examples would be Quest Diagnostics, Apple Incorporated, Cisco Systems, Target Corporation, Union Pacific, JP Morgan would be another one. Businesses that we feel would be highly likely to survive long periods of uncertainty.
And so it sounds like one of the key factors in your formula for success for these companies is no or low debt levels.
Low or no debt levels, profitability, conservative management teams, and markets that are growing. Pretty classic stuff. What we're really doing is avoiding what we would consider inferior businesses.
Thanks for that report, Mike. And again, now we have a little bit of a quick medical section here with Bobby Connor with Health Focus, who recently spoke with Dr. Michael Schmidt about preventing the spread of COVID-19 in our communities. Dr. Schmidt is a professor of microbiology and immunology at MUSC, and he is the past chair of the Council of Microbial Sciences at the American Society of Microbiology. Bobby asked Dr. Schmidt about the effectiveness of precautions to limit the spread of the virus.
First, physically distancing ourselves when we're out in public is perhaps the easiest thing each and every one of us can do to help control the spread of this virus here in South Carolina and everywhere else on planet Earth. As you move further away from each other when you're out in public, the likelihood of you encountering a virus goes down with each successive foot.
Any other tips for us to keep in mind as far as the distancing?
Well, 6 feet at a minimum, but the greater the distance, the safer you are. So physically distancing is step one, and then wearing the mask is step two. If you do those two things in concert with each other, you will greatly curtail the spread of this virus in our towns, our country, and hopefully around the world.
And this kind of approach works if everyone is doing it.
The only way we are going to control COVID-19 is through a team effort. Everyone needs to physically distance. Everyone needs to be wearing the mask. And then the third step that we all need to be doing to protect ourselves is hand hygiene.
Okay, now tell us the details of hand hygiene. What are the basics we need to know to get this job done properly?
Hand washing, simple soap and water for 20 seconds works. As we wash our hands with soap and water, making certain that we do the tops, the bottoms, and in between the digits of our hands, we can make certain that any virus that we have accidentally picked up is literally washed down the drain.
As a scientist in the field of microbiology, what brings you the most hope in terms of finding solutions to COVID-19 right now?
Well, Bobby, this is the first time in my long career that I have seen the scientists of the globe all with one common purpose. Never before have so many worked at solving a single problem, and that is how to stop the spread of COVID-19 on our planet. We have chemists, biologists, physicists. We have the unending caring of our healthcare professionals. All of these folks are working together to control COVID-19, and you can do your part simply by wearing a mask, washing your hands, and staying at least 6 feet apart from others when you're out and about.
Thanks, Bobby. And just how effective could masks be if everyone wore one? Well, Dr. Robert Redfield, director of the CDC, said recently that the United States could get the coronavirus pandemic under control in 1 to 2 months if every American wore a mask. So just in time for schools to be back, you'd think. Or football, whichever one you take more seriously, apparently. Now this is our wind down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's going on in your world. Are you going to work? Are you unemployed? Are you on the front lines of this pandemic? What are your thoughts about schools reopening this fall? How do you want to see them done? I know a lot of school districts are polling parents and teachers and students. Let us know what you think about going back to school this fall. 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, where you're calling from, and your thoughts about what's going on in your world. Leave a maybe about a 3-minute long message because things do get cut off and it gets a little crazy. So that being said, AT, do we have any voicemails to listen to?
We do, and since you spoke so much earlier, I'm gonna choose the shortest one, but it is also the most pertinent one, and it is Rose calling in again. So let's roll the tape.
Oh, yes, let's hear from Rose.
Roll the dang old tape, Rose.
Roll the tape, please.
Hey, guys, it's Rose in Greenville County again. Two things that are on my mind this week. We have a number of people that we know who have tested positive and have been experiencing symptoms, none of them having to be hospitalized at this point. But that is going around, you know, it's really personal. And people we know all over the country, not just here in the state. And please, 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 if you are positive, you test positive, don't go anywhere. Please don't travel. The other thing that's on our mind is looking at schools. We listened to the districts. They had a Facebook Live a couple of days ago. And I think there were a lot of parents frustrated, including us, that there's not announcements on what the protocols are. You know, we got great information about how the determinations will be made if students will be in the building or not, and that's a great piece of the pie. But the bigger thing that's frustrating us and a lot of people we know is, what are you going to do? As a trained engineer, I'm used to doing hazardous operations reviews, safety assessment reviews, that you have plans in place before they happen, and then seeing a gap there. Our schools didn't have enough soap and paper towels and hand sanitizer before the pandemic began. So how are we going to take care of it now? What's the plan if someone in the building actually tests positive? And let's face it, we know that there will be kids who come to school sick because their parents feel like they don't have any other options. So that's the part that's really, really frustrating us. And I'm hoping that our districts in our state will really take this seriously, have plans in place, and get that information out to parents.
Rose, always great hearing from you. Your perspective is always very interesting, and especially your concerns about the schools, especially since we just talked about this, and you're talking about how soap and paper towels were in short supply before the pandemic, and now, you know, we're talking about possibly going back to schools that, you know, had shortened supplies. So that's kind of concerning there when you think about that, especially when you're trying to get these protocols in place too, which I assume will be forthcoming. But again, those plans are being approved by the Department of Education this Friday. That's the deadline, it sounds like. So I think we'll start seeing more and more of those details coming out. And then hopefully some of those concerns will be alleviated for you, Rose. Okay, yeah. So why that kind of timed out really well, AT, with that voicemail there. We've been getting a few good ones. Again, we...
Very apropos.
Yeah, we look forward to hearing from you guys, especially, you know, if you have similar concerns to like Rose does. I mean, those are some valid, simple things you want to know and get those answers to. Don't you feel like
I'm surprised more people haven't called to take me to task on my cheese hot take.
Yeah, remember that one about the cheese and the bacon? Just really quick, AT. What was it? The cheese and bacon don't fix everything?
They're stupid flavors and are a crutch.
You're really just hoping now that someone will call in and be like,
"Yeah, I want someone to take me to task about this." I've been putting myself out there, fellas.
And again, folks, the man is lactose intolerant. He is biased.
That's why I like cheese the most, because I am lactose intolerant and I still choose to eat it. So I'm better than everyone.
Now
else.
You're liking. wait till Big Cheese gets wind of this.
Yeah, that cow on the baby bell cow going to show up and try and beat me up.
And the Coburg
gonna
cow.
Going to donkey kick me in the face or something.
What's been going on? I'm back. I was down at the beach, back again. It's not in a closet. I'm in a big room. This is exciting.
What did you miss? You're not in a closet. You're in a big, large room. Your tour of closets is...
Yeah, geez, I guess...
I know what you missed. I made boiled peanuts and you missed it. And it was a fiasco, to say the least. So I always go to the same farm to get peanuts by the bushel. It's the only thing I've ever bought by a bushel. And as a New York, New Jersey guy, this is the first bushel of anything I've ever been in contact with. And it's always like $45, $50 for this bushel of peanuts. I like Red Runners, not Jumbos. So I go there and I have like $50 in my pocket. I'm ready to pay. And he goes, "Oh, it's $10. And I was like, "Yeah, all right. How much is it really?" They're like, "No, it's $10. You thought I was lying." I was like, "I did. I thought you were lying." And so I was like, "Yo, this is the best deal ever." So I got it 2 days before I was going to boil the peanuts.
Yes.
And I put it in the pot the night before. And when I opened it up, it was like, gnats flying out of it like the Green Mile out of Michael Clark Duncan's mouth. It was disgusting. They went rotten.
Ugh.
That's why they were so cheap. And they intentionally sold me bad stuff. And
bad
so I told my friend CJ, who comes over and helps me, we responsibly did these boiled peanuts. I was like, "Hey, we ain't boiling peanuts, homie." And he was exactly at that time in front of Green Peanuts at Food Lion and bought
saving grace.
15 pounds of boiled peanuts or of green peanuts there. And we made them and they were great. We put 4 ham hocks in it because whatever, vegans.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. First the cheese and then the bacon and now the ham hocks.
They're really good. I mean, I think my friend Chris, he helps me. My friend CJ, he helps me. Chris and I have been doing it for like 5 years. And I think that this is easily our best batch. That's right. The New Jersey guy makes the best boiled peanuts in town. Fight me.
Well, yeah, there we go. I was eating boiled peanuts, but I was off a friend's dock throwing the shells into the marsh there. It was nice. Into the water.
That's quintessentially South Carolina.
It was straight up South Carolina. I was like, this don't get much better than this right here, Sonny. And
I can't go back to roasted peanuts. I mean, boiled peanuts are just so far superior. It's crazy.
And sometimes I eat the whole shell if it's mushy enough. I'm like, I don't care. I don't have time to peel it.
Yeah, when they're really green and fresh, you can eat the whole shell.
I dig it.
Yeah.
I dig it. It's like
I have one friend, Andrew. I know he listens to this. He insists that you're supposed to eat the whole shell.
I'm cool with that.
I know he's crazy.
I mean, it's a lot of fiber we're talking here, people, but
it's good for your body.
Just want all the goodness in that little shell there. So tell us about your boiled peanut stories. If you have one,
what's your recipe?
To ATs. Yeah, share us a recipe. Share us your summertime favorites. You know, I haven't even had a tomato sandwich yet this summer, which is kind of surprising. I know a lot of people, some people just like scoff at tomato sandwiches, but I think they're incredible.
I don't like a tomato sandwich.
Well, you just think it's too basic. Some people say that, but...
I like cooked tomatoes. I don't like raw tomatoes. Another hot take right there.
I think a lot of people are like that. My brother's like that. But yeah, I usually eat a tomato sandwich like over the sink because I'm just so excited to eat it. Anyway.
I that's a disgusting ASMR, FYI.
Gotta use Duke's mayonnaise. I mean, that's the only thing.
Is it a peach? Is it a tomato sandwich? Who knows?
Is it a peach or is it a tomato sandwich? I'm eating them both over the sink. Tell us what you eat over the sink. Tell us about your favorite summer eats. And again, thanks for listening to the pod, y'all. Show us your appreciation by leaving us a voicemail or a review on iTunes. You can call us at 803-563-7169. And stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org as well. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. Also, consider becoming an ETV member. Membership starts at $40, and if you pledge at the $75 level, you get access to PBS Passport and all that great programming your donation helps support. So one more streaming service out there if you need it. It's part of your membership package. Anyway, thanks again for listening to The Lead. I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
Why don't you, you gotta friend your grandma on LinkedIn.
Guys, just friend grandma, okay? Why? She's not even looking for work. She's been retired for 20 years. Guys, just do it. Grandma's bored.
Grandma just found LinkedIn. You have to be friends with her.
Nothing she posts about is related to the job I do. Just, guys, come on. Give grandma a break, guys. Come on.